He was waiting for me in the living room when I walked in. At first, I didn't recognize him. A short man with bad posture and thick glasses. He looked nervous when he saw me and muttered a simple,
"Hey, detective."
It took me a few seconds before I recognized him as the janitor from the school. But, "Hey, Roger, I thought we weren't meeting until later." He shook his head and said in an exasperated voice,
No, I'm not. Could you please not do that?
Do what?
My name is Peter Cole.
I looked at Jamie and said, "Do you mind giving us a minute?" Jamie nodded and left towards his bedroom. I took a chair and invited Peter to do the same. After he had sat and taken a moment to calm down, I asked him a question. "What's up, Peter? Why are you at my brother's kid's house? Should I be concerned?" Peter took off his glasses and wiped his eyes, forcing back tears. I didn't know exactly how to react, but I assumed time would tell, so I waited until he was ready to answer. After a few moments, he managed to get it together enough to say,
"I really shouldn't be here. If he finds out I came to talk to you, I..."
"Who finds out?"
"Roger. Who else?"
"For fuck's sake. Look, Peter. Is there a reason you're here? Because I'm actually still trying to figure out what happened to my niece, and bullshit distractions like this aren't helping."
"I can't trust him."
"Who? Roger! He acts like he's working for the common good. He really isn't. He's just a manipulator. He just cares about himself and these favors he's collecting. Not what you'd expect. He hurts people. He can't be stopped."
I took a deep breath and I rubbed my temples. "Look, Peter, I'm not interested in role-playing or whatever the hell this is. Roger is a puppet, a toy, an inanimate object. If you've got some kind of anxiety or whatever and can only communicate through the doll, that's fine. You do you. But I've actually got shit to do. So unless you want to tell me whatever it was that Roger found in Vanessa's case, then please, kindly, get the fuck out of this house." Peter stood up, muttering something about being sorry for wasting my time, and left. I felt defeated. Another dead end. The only thing left to do was to start over. I took apart Vanessa's room piece by piece and spent a couple of hours on her laptop. There was nothing out of the ordinary to be found on either case. Her phone was still plugged in next to her bed, but it was locked with a passcode. I made a few guesses using birthdays, but nothing worked. Was too smart for that anyway. I pocketed her cell with the intention of mailing it to my guy back in New Orleans, the one who could break into anything if the money was right, and I'd already decided to make this his priority number one. She didn't keep a diary, or a day planner, or anything that could have given me an idea where to start. Her sock drawer had a stack of cash in the corner, about 350 in tens and twenties, and a dime bag of pot. The post-it near her bed had her most recent work schedule. Everything on her laptop was password protected using a master password manager program. She was smart, but that's a level of caution that I would categorize as paranoia. I had only ever seen that kind of behavior with one other person. Me. And I deal with some pretty sensitive stuff by profession. Her Facebook settings wouldn't let me see any of her posts, but Jamie was able to view her friends list from her account. I cross-referenced names with the school database, and under an hour, I had my checklist for the day planned out. It was going to be difficult running these people down without access to a phone, never mind the fact that I was a grown man trying to convince a bunch of teenagers to sit down for a Q&A. Frankie was a tall, homely girl, and best I could tell, Vanessa's best friend. I found her at the local pizza place where she worked, and convinced her to give me a few moments of her time. She mostly corroborated what I already knew. Vanessa was saving up money, planning to move out of town, didn't have any secrets worth sharing. She wasn't seeing anybody, but...
Well, what?
Well, but she had this glow about her, like, I knew there was somebody. They went out a few times, not like a date or anything, but she didn't really want to talk about it. And then a couple weeks ago... they went away. Like, they broke up. But not like they were ever really official or anything, you know?
Guy? Girl? Do you have a name? Any idea where they were from?
No. See, she didn't think it was serious enough to talk about it, I guess. They met online, I think.
They caught her ex-boyfriend, Brian, as he was getting off shift from the local garage. He was in a bit of a hurry to get to the deer stand, but agreed to answer a few quick questions. I asked about the mystery person in Vanessa's life, but Brian informed me that he absolutely didn't give any fucks about what she was up to since the breakup. He was an asshole. It wasn't any impression that he was lying. I found Hammonds, her English teacher, the one that she had friended on Facebook, at his home on the other side of town. He was a little too happy to cooperate, and if it wasn't for the rock-solid alibi on the night of the disappearance, taking his kids to visit their dying grandmother the next day over, I might have been tempted to play things differently. But it quickly became clear that he also had nothing to hide. He showed me the letter of recommendation that he had written for Vanessa's batch of college applications. We spent a few minutes drinking coffee and talking. He agreed that the cult story was bullshit, but he had heard some rumors around school that she was seeing somebody new. Of course, a middle-aged, overweight English teacher wasn't exactly the key holder for information when it came to students' personal lives. It wasn't a total waste, though, if he pointed me to my next lead. Morgan Hardy. According to Hammonds, everybody knew that Morgan had a thing for Vanessa. He was an awkward kid, a year under her. He still asked her out on more than one occasion, and was turned down on more than one occasion. He wasn't on her list of friends, but Hammond knew where I could find him. There weren't any cars in the driveway at Morgan's house. I rang his doorbell and knocked. Then waited about 5 minutes before circling around to the backyard and breaking in through an open window. I didn't have time to play it legal, and besides, this was hardly the worst thing that I'd done all day. It wasn't hard to figure out which bedroom was his. There was an oversized Fight Club poster, thumbtacked to his closed door like an edgy teenager beacon. I pushed it open, and immediately realized that I wasn't in Kansas anymore. There was a mirror on the wall, covered with pictures of Vanessa. Some looked like they were taken off social media. Others looked like they were snapped from a voyeur's point of view. The pictures continued all over the walls, thumbtacked in random intervals, more or less at an eye level. The room was a mess. Clothes and books and dishes stuck whatever they would fit, which made my search all the more difficult. I checked the obvious places and hit gold right off the bat. Under his mattress, next to a one-hitter and baggie of weed, was a girl's yellow t-shirt, a match for the one Vanessa wore the last time she was seen. I could hear Morgan's car stereo blaring the god-awful excuse for music as he pulled into the driveway, giving me plenty of time to sneak out the way I came in, but that was the last thing in the world I wanted to do. Instead, I closed the bedroom door and waited for him in his closet. The door cracked just enough for me to see out. I needed to see him before he saw me. I needed to see his reaction to know for sure. It didn't take him long to get inside. He shut the bedroom door behind him and made a beeline straight for his computer desk, but then stopped halfway and muttered, "What the fuck? He was taller than I expected. With at least an inch on me. Long, greasy black hair and the beginning of a patchy beard. Where he stood, he had his back to me, and by the time he turned around, I was there with my gun pointed right at him, ready for a kill shot. He fell to the ground and covered his face, screaming, "Oh, please, please, shit, man, please don't hurt me." "Shut up," I yelled at him. "What do you want? Oh, God, dude, just take whatever you want, but please don't hurt me." That was the last thing he got out before he started sobbing. "Phone. Give me your phone."
"What?"
he blubbered.
"Now!
Sorry!" He dug his cell phone out of his pocket and held it out to me. "Put it on the bed," I yelled. He nodded and tossed the phone onto his dirty, unmade mattress. I kept the gun locked onto his forehead as I walked over to grab it.
"Why did you put up all these pics?"
"Shut up!" I screamed, running over to the spot where he'd collapsed into a pathetic heap and smacking him across the face with my weapon. It worked. He shut right the hell up, but just to make sure, I pressed the tip of the gun against his face and put the fear of God into him. "If you say one more word, just one more single word to me, I'll paint these walls red. Not if you understand." He understood. He closed his eyes and fell onto his side in the fetal position, crying. I felt awful doing this to the poor kid, but it was the only way to convince whoever set this whole thing up that I was buying their little fabrication. He almost ruined it by asking me why I put up all these pictures of Vanessa.
Yeah, I'm not the smartest person in the world, but I would be a complete moron to see an orgy of evidence like this and believe it. When I first came into town, I made a point to look up and memorize the sheriff's personal cell phone number for just such a situation as this. I picked Morgan's phone up off the bed and dialed. Clyde answered, and I'm sure he was confused as hell when I explained that I had found Vanessa's killer and told him where he could find Morgan. The look on the kid's face when he first walked into the room proved that he had no idea where all these pictures had come from. The whole thing was so nice and neat. The perfect horrible ending to the story, complete with a villain, motive, and a resolution that would sate the pain-in-the-ass detective that was asking too many questions. He told me to stay put, and I lied and promised him I would. 5 minutes later, I was in the Honda driving as fast as I could without raising any suspicion, and trying to decide where the hell I was actually going. The story was starting to take shape in the worst possible way. Vanessa had to be tied to the town's secret somehow. Whatever entity had set me up this morning and made the truck disappear was now adapting their strategy, offering me a way out. All I had to do was take it. I'd actually decided that there was nothing that was going to make me stop until either I figured out what happened to Vanessa, or I was 6 feet under. I tried to think while I drove aimlessly around the shithole of a town, but I couldn't come up with anything actually worth calling a plan. After a few minutes on the back roads, I came up to an old mom-and-pop hardware store and remembered what Pierre had told me earlier about vice-a-vice Roger. Them. Framing me up for some open cases in town. After what I had seen, I had no idea his warning was genuine, so I decided to cover my ass and pulled into the empty parking lot to go shopping. 30 minutes later, I had a Boy Scout basket of supplies for nearly any situation. Duct tape, pipe cleaner, rope, pliers, hammer, gloves, flashlight, BJ weld, and some other various odds and ends. When it comes to an unknown, there's no such thing as an over-preparation. It was already getting dark by the time I left the store, and I made the mistake of feeling optimistic. And it didn't last too long. I saw the figure sitting in the passenger side front seat of Vanessa's Honda right away. There was no mistaking him. Figure, dressed all in camo, paint green smeared across his face, stared forward with a lifeless gaze. A million thoughts had tried to crash their way through my mind at once, but by some miracle I managed to grab onto the only one that mattered. Be calm, be rational. Think this through. Facts. Use the facts. The man sitting in the car waiting for me looked exactly like... what was his name? Ned. He died earlier today, I checked. How long was I inside? Half an hour? How did they find me? How did they sneak his body into my car without me noticing? And why? Why? Of course I knew why. They couldn't take any chances. Even if Morgan took the fall for Vanessa's disappearance, I was still a loose end. Which means that this is a setup. Which means the police will be here any second. Think now. Options, go. I could run, flee the scene, call it in later that the car was stolen. But now it'd be covered in my DNA. We found the dead body. He would get tied back to me. What kind of story could I tell in my defense? I literally killed him, so the truth is out. No, forget that. Next option. Get in the car, gun it, anywhere. Leave the fucking town if I need to go. I can drop the body in the parking lot. No. The old man working the cash register at the front store would tie me to this place. Okay. Take the body with me. The cops will pull you over. How do you explain this? Cops aren't here yet. So that leaves me with one option. I dropped the things, raced to the trunk of the car, popped it open, and then opened the car door and checked to make sure. He was just as dead as the last time I saw him. The only thing different now was the bullet hole in his forehead. Whoever put him in the seat had made a point to splatter blood all over the dash and carpet, but I didn't have the luxury of time. This is going to need to be fast and messy. I yanked him out of the seat and dragged him over my shoulder, around the back, shoved him into the trunk, and slammed it shut the same second that the deputy's cruiser pulled into the parking lot. I took a few deep breaths, tried to steady my nerves, and then, when that wasn't working, I lit a cigarette and I went back to where I dropped my bags. Evening, Mr. Riggins. I tried not to look guilty as fuck when I turned around to face the deputy rookie that I had just met yesterday. Ah, Franklin, right? I said as I picked up my purchase and started for the car. He followed right behind me. Sure is a small town, huh, deputy? Yeah, sure is, he said. I opened the back door and put my bags into the seat, keeping it casual and cool. I leaned against the car, slowly continuing to smoke the coffin nail then offered one to Franklin, who shook his head and said, "No, it's all right. Been quit for a few years." Put the pack away and said, "You're a better man than me." After a second, I could see that Franklin was getting nervous, trying to look over my shoulder into the car. "Is something wrong, Franklin?" I asked point blank. No, we're good." His poker face was just as bad today. "Well," I said, "any developments with Middleton? I know you're not supposed to say anything, but off the record, does he look like he's any closer to cracking?" "I doubt it." I finished my smoke, put the cherry out in the heel of my boot, and then put the butt back into the cigarette pack as Franklin watched. "Look, I'm flattered by the attention, but something tells me you're not here for my world-class conversation skills. Something on your mind?" Franklin finally relaxed and let out a laugh. "Well, you got me. Somebody called the station, said there was a man outside in the hardware shop trying to sell drugs out of that trunk of a Honda." I returned his laugh. "No shit. You say what he looked like?" Franklin went on to describe me to a T, down to the black jacket scrapes on my face. Franklin and I shared another laugh. "Well, I guess I better get going," I said, "before anybody gets the wrong idea, huh?" Yeah, but real quick, why don't you let me take a look inside your trunk? You know, just so I can put it on my report, huh?" He shook my head and said, "Sorry, Franklin, you'll have to put in your report that I refuse to open it without a warrant. You know, it's the principle of the thing." Franklin nodded a couple times and said, "Oh, well, I guess you better get going then, huh?" I felt a deep sense of relief. It lasted all for half a second before the radio on Franklin's belt crackled to life with the sound of a loud and urgent voice.
All units, be on the lookout for a Honda Accord plate number.
And Vanessa's car plate number.
Be advised, the driver is Eric Riggin. He is likely armed.
I tried to laugh again, but Franklin reached for his gun, so I put a right hook across his cheek hard enough to drop him and split my knuckle open. It wasn't enough to knock him out, though, but his head hit the concrete and he started groaning. I went straight for his gun, wrestled it free from his belt, and pitched it onto the roof of the store. Then, while he was still regaining his bearings, I took out his cuffs, put one around his left wrist before he snapped back into action and jumped on top of me, throwing wild punches and screaming. He was a terrible fighter and relying entirely on adrenaline. I guarded my face until he had tired himself out, then grabbed him by the wrist and gave him a solid kick to the side of his knee. He dropped again, and I put him onto his stomach, twisted his arm behind his back enough to connect the handcuffs. I jumped to my feet, turned to see where the sound had come from. It was the old man with white hair, the cashier from inside the hardware store. He was standing there with a shotgun in his hands aimed at the air.
No, that was a warning shot, he said with a slight quiver in his voice. The next one's for you if you don't let go right now.
As he said that, he pointed the gun at me. That's a Hatfield break-action shotgun, he said.
Yeah, so what?
He answered back, trying to sound so intimidating but failing. I'm not an idiot, old man. Thing's a single shot. You just fired your entire payload without warning. He trembled slightly, but refused to lower the weapon, so I gave him a little incentive, pulling my own piece and aiming it right back. This one, however, has plenty of warning shots left in it. He tossed the shotgun down and held up his hands as he made his way to his knees. Good, he said as I circled around to the front of Vanessa's car. The idiot's gunshot would have attracted every bored law enforcement agent in the whole damn town. I needed to get somewhere else. Fast. B. Continue.